You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 10th, 2014. And despite the title of the episode, we are going back to The Walking Dead.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It's a serious, not humorless conversation about video games. Every other month, we talk about The Walking Dead.
It seems to be the case, yes.
Actually, it's been every month, I guess. They've been quite on track this season. Telltale recently released the fifth and final episode of Season 2 of the acclaimed Game of the Year, Walking Dead, from the ExperiencePoints.net website.
Are you already calling it Game of the Year?
No. I'm saying last year, 2013. It was definitely in both of our top threes.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And so what we do is we take a run through each episode, going through our decisions and talk about the plot a little bit. We'll spend a short amount of time doing non-spoilery stuff at the beginning, but then give everyone a fair warning because it's really hard to talk about these things without talking about details.
Oh, yeah. Sweet, sweet, juicy details.
Those tender details.
I should say, because this is the last episode, mm-hmm. I'm guessing that the way that things could have gone mm-hmm. is vastly different. Which makes me
remember
think...
Remember I told you this? Because I played it and I was like, okay, did you play? He's like, no. All right. Well, I haven't been reading anything online because things could be starkly... potentially, things could have been very different.
I've had some accidental spoilers around some of the things, and yes, it is. There is a variety of outcomes for this week's episode.
All right. So, is there any non-spoiler stuff that we want to talk about?
There is. I want to talk a little bit about flashbacks. Uh-huh. There are two flashbacks in this
flashback
episode.
The quest for identity, early 1990s video game.
Oh my, how did you know? It's totally relevant. It's not. It's completely irrelevant. There are two flashbacks in this episode. Uh-huh. Is this the first time we've seen a flashback in a Walking Dead episode? I'm guessing
I think
not.
So.
But
oh,
I feel
you don't
like
think so?
No, you don't think?
I don't know. I can't remember another one.
I mean, I feel at the very least it includes an interactive flashback. I think the flashback idea is an interesting one because last week, at the end, or not the last week, the last conversation we had about episode 4 of The Walking Dead, we said, gosh, we have no idea where this is going to go. Mm-hmm. Who knows what's going to happen? And we said, there's a chance that at the end of the day, they're going to have one of those things, and they did this for The Wolf Among Us, they did this for season 1 of The Walking Dead, where somebody measures all of our decisions, and we sort of have to think about it. Mm-hmm. And while I really enjoyed that in season 1, I recall saying, we kind of hope that that didn't happen in this episode, and I don't think it does, but I think the flashback sort of serves that same purpose, which is to make you stop and think about the decisions that have been made to get you to this point. Mm-hmm. You're always thinking about the decisions you've made to get to this point in The Walking Dead. That's what this game is all about anyway. Yeah. In every episode, you're thinking about it anyway. I almost feel like this is an episode about the act of playing The Walking Dead in a way. Mm. And those flashbacks, I think, are really interesting. They're a good way to sort of put you in that mindset again without having to tread the same ground.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about the flashbacks in particular because they are significant.
Yeah. I mean, I also just like them... like from a storytelling and mechanical perspective, it's still relatively rare for video games to jump back and forth chronologically in a linear story.
Right.
And so I think using the same tools, like the same like dialogue trees and making those decisions, but as a person in the past that you've grown to know, like it's like, oh, these are the same tools that this person was using back in the day, but I'm now used to this person using them in an extreme environment. But they were kind of training this whole time, and I didn't really know that was happening. And you only know about it when you kind of recollect. And like video games are like inherently difficult to have like reflective times in because you're always kind of, you know, adding to the mechanics. And so I like that a lot. I'd be interested in more games that did not just like flashbacks to change the set, but flashbacks to like revisit certain ways of how the world felt,
yeah,
you know, at the very beginning of a game. Like, even something as stupid as, like...
Chrono Trigger?
No, that's like... I mean, Chrono Trigger is, like, perfect, right? It's like, oh, I remember fighting these enemies very early on, yeah, and, like, how difficult were they? And now I'm kind of going back in time and realizing that I'm a mechanically different person than I was.
Yeah.
And an emotionally
different person.
Well, I mean, in a video game. Sure. But, yeah, and an emotionally different person as well. But something as simple as, like, in Zelda, like... having a flashback of, like, when you didn't have your Master Sword or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like that idea a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
this is, like, in those games when you lose... I feel like there's a whole episode about that.
Abilities.
Well, I mean, even if you have to go back and grind in a past level, like, does that kind of count as a flashback mechanically?
Somewhat. I mean, you know, like, you're revisiting things. You're still your same person. You're not really seeing your past self, I guess. But, yeah.
There are a few games where, like, at some point you lose all of your abilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah, but that's more of a, I don't know, I think that's a bit cheesier than,
that's true,
than what happened.
Than The Walking Dead.
When Clementine loses her lava suit, it really it really bummed me out.
Yeah, it's fine. She found it in the temple again.
Yeah.
It's totally cool. All right, so starting off, I guess, should we go into spoilers? Are we that fast? Is there anything else you want to add before spoiler time?
Kind of. I guess I don't know. I can't decide how much to say about the ending because I feel like I had a much different sense at the end of this season than I did the first season.
Sure.
Maybe that's a bit spoilery, though. I think this episode did a good job at not letting the QuickTime events get in the way, yes, of what was happening.
Yeah.
Because there were some sequences in this episode that could have gotten really cumbersome. And it could have started feeling really overly game-like rather than story-like.
Yep.
But there's enough interactivity that still makes it feel action. Like, there's a shooting sequence,
mm-hmm,
where it's like, it still feels extremely tense, but it's because of what's happening around the shooting. The shooting itself is not extremely hard, but what's happening around the shooting makes it very distracting to do the shooting.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, I mean, I feel like they really... Some of the earlier episodes to me were a little dicey in terms of the action, and I feel like they found their way here.
This season in particular.
Yeah. I think this season in particular. But I think that they landed at a place where things felt dramatic, even though they weren't like a mechanical challenge, like, mm-hmm, like a first-person shooter or something.
Just broadly speaking, were you happy with this episode? Like, do you feel like you're in a good place at the end of season two?
I think... So I didn't like the episode, actually.
You did not like the episode? Okay.
I thought this was probably the weakest episode of all of them.
Okay, interesting.
But it's hard to...
Not just that it's the weakest, but you actively disliked it.
I actively disliked it for certain, like, structural things, but also, I don't know... I mean, it's a legitimate choice, but I feel like this episode is probably the bleakest Walking Dead episode that I've ever played. Like, yes. I feel like... And I feel like this season two was just... bleak in a way that season one never even touched.
Yeah, I think there's a certain moment. I guess we'll get to that relatively soon, but there's a certain moment in season one that is echoed in this episode specifically, mm-hmm, that I think is the lowest moment of season one.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's brought up.
Right.
I mean, the second flashback in this episode is, to in my opinion, the lowest moment in season one.
Yeah.
Besides maybe the climax.
Mm. And so, I mean, it's hard to divorce the kind of like the emotional drudgery from like whether I thought that this was actually a good story or not. But like, I ended this just feeling awful. Like, I mean, it was like...
I think that's... Yeah, I think maybe you... I mean, it'll be interesting to see what your choices are, because I know that there's some ways to play this episode where maybe it's not as depressing, or it's not as you know, bleak.
Yeah, I mean, I still like from an academic perspective, I still think I still really enjoyed it, and it's not, there's not very many video games out there that are kind of disgusting on the same level that, you know, The Road or something like that is disgusting.
Sure.
Like, and so, and even if you don't really like it at the end, you're kind of still satisfied that you went through it. But we should definitely jump into spoilers at this point.
Right,
I'm interested to see how this story shook out.
All right, everybody, spoilers for No Going Back.
Yeah.
Episode 5 of The Walking Dead season 2.
Yeah. And I wrote down my choices here too, right, so we can figure it out.
Well, it starts off.
Yeah.
I fired the gun to kill.
Oh yeah,
Rebecca, zombie Rebecca. She was already dead. Yeah. First off,
let's not call her Rebecca anymore. She's
no longer Rebecca.
She's a husk of her.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the gunfire goes off. You chose not to shoot her. Gunfire goes off anyway.
Yeah, and then you're in the you're in this firefight with this Russian.
There was a firefight. with a Russian.
And the first choice was whether you go for the kid or not, because Clementine is kind of coming to and like. Figure out what to do. I went for the kid because I felt like I was the closest, like who else was going to do it. According to my playthrough, 84% of other people did that.
Turns out most people would go try to save a baby.
Yeah, like, okay, congrats everyone.
Yeah, I feel a little bit better about the world.
Yeah, I feel like that was a fairly no-brainer, but it does cause some some dramatic stuff to happen, like Luke gets shot in the leg.
Yeah, I like that Luke recognizes that you made a good call.
Yeah.
It's almost rare in The Walking Dead for someone to say, hey, buddy, good choice, right? It's always so neutral.
Yeah.
But instead he's like, oh, I didn't see the baby. Good call on getting the baby.
Yeah, yeah.
If you choose to do that.
But, and I don't know what it looks like if you don't, but I mean, either way, you still end up with this kid.
Yeah.
I just thought, I wanted to make sure that I still ended up with the kid because that was a dynamic that had never been in any of the other episodes, so I wanted to make sure it was kind of meta gaming it or whatever, but I wanted to make sure I could continue that story.
So you thought for a second that the baby might just straight up die. I thought it would kill a baby in The Walking Dead.
I thought multiple times in this episode.
That's true. Last episode, you said you thought the baby might turn and bite someone.
Yeah, I mean, like gum. They don't have any teeth, so you just have to kill it. Like,
oh, God. That's terrible.
I mean, I thought multiple times that the baby was going to bite the bullet, but it hasn't yet. So, but, you know, there was a lot happening, and I think, you know, it's worth noting that at the very beginning, it starts to foreshadow, like, what's happening with Kenny, because he grabs the kid, I forget what his name is.
AJ. Arvo.
Yeah, Arvo. Yeah. Yeah. The Russian guy who, the Russian kid who Clem.
Fucking Arvo.
I know. I know. You let him go in the fourth episode. And he is part of the road band that gets a jump on you. But Kenny takes him as a hostage, basically, and tries to make the other group set down their guns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that Kenny is going to shoot him. Like, I mean, he would do it. So, I mean, that's like just a foreshadowing of Kenny's relationship towards, well, pretty much everyone going forward in the rest of the episode. Okay, anything else there? I think that was pretty straightforward.
That's pretty straightforward, yeah.
Yeah. So after that, I mean, so at this point, like, what is your feelings towards Kenny? Like, you had been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah, so, I mean, at least for me, I enjoyed this episode quite a bit, and I think part of it comes back to the way that I was feeling about this whole fucking thing for so long, right?
Yeah.
In episode two, when we first meet Kenny, I remember discussing this on the podcast, and I said, you know, I hugged him, I was glad he was there, but I realized, like, Clementine is not good for Kenny. Mm-hmm. Clementine should not, like... There were times in episode two where I'm like, the best thing to do would be to split the group up, would be to not be with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And over and over and over again, like, Clementine and this conflict is about whether or not she tries to keep the group together. And for the most part, I'm always thinking, keep together for now so that you can survive to the point where you can safely and amicably separate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still thinking about Kenny in that way. If I could have, I would have easily killed Arvo in that scene. Like, in my opinion, Arvo had his chance, right? He took the medicine, we let him go, it was totally cool, and he fucking backstabbed us, and now people are dead because of it.
Right.
If he had not been a jackass, like, his sister wouldn't be dead. Her death, that's totally on him.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So...
Well, I mean, there's some implications that maybe he had fallen in with these... I mean, these guys look like mobsters, kind of.
Sure, but I mean, there are different ways to go about it, right? Yeah. He could have warned us when it was just us and the medicine. He could have been like, no, I need this medicine. Yeah. Like, there are cronies who are going to beat me up. Like, you have to help me. You know, there's all sorts of ways he could have dealt with this scenario.
Yeah.
And he didn't... And he continues to do this, and it comes up again very quickly after this particular scene. But what I found myself doing was... regretting not killing him because I was just trying to keep people sane, right? And Kenny is always his, you know, since the second episode, he's been, you know, off the chain.
Yeah. I want to talk about the Russians a little bit because I was disappointed by how little development they did with them.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly...
The tattooed guy in particular, like, it's just too much of a caricature of a Russian mobster.
And I think also, like, I mean, they're in America. Like, I think what they should have done is made them Latino or Chinese or like, because they wanted a linguistic barrier to make things weird. And I think finding these random Russians was just a little bit too off the wall for me. Like, I just didn't really buy it. And it felt almost cartoonish that, like, there's this untrustworthy Russian.
Do you think that would, but I think that maybe they were concerned that they would make it cartoonish for Chinese or Latinos, which is a little bit more sensitive of a racial issue in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, that could be true, but they've never shied away from that stuff in The Walking Dead before.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had plenty of black characters, like, I felt like the Russians were just meant to be this mysterious other people that were hard to understand and hard to comprehend, but you didn't feel too bad about icing a bunch of them at the very beginning.
I mean, I wonder if it would have behooved them just to not have the language barrier at all.
Like, yeah.
What good did that have, right?
Right. I mean,
Arvo could speak decent English, right, and he still refused to explain himself or, you know, respond in the way that would have satisfied my Clementine.
Well, that was the other thing. I felt Arvo was underdeveloped in general. Like, I wanted to know more about that backstory. Like, why was he being such a douchebag? Right. Like, did he love only his sister and not the guys that you killed? Did he have some sort? I mean, he obviously had some sort of, like, physical problem since he had a leg brace the whole time. Yeah. I mean, I think
part of the point is to not have somebody that you can read and delve into, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to decide, I can't speak to this person. I'm not going to be able to speak to this person. And even if I do speak to this person, the context is such that I'm not, A, going to be able to trust what he says,
mm-hmm,
or B, going to believe that he thinks I have his best interest in mind.
Yeah.
Right, and the result is, like, you don't really know how to deal with him, right? It comes in later when he's trying to leave with Bonnie and Mike, just to jump ahead a little bit. And you have the opportunity to ask
Bonnie and Mike.
Well, so you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to ask them if you can go with them.
Yeah.
Why would Clementine do that? And I think, you know, my Clementine didn't.
No.
To a little spoiler.
And to jump ahead, 94% of other people didn't either.
Of course.
Like, yeah.
But the idea is, that 94% is one of the biggest disparities this season has had at all.
Oh, yeah.
And I think shows, I guess, a failure to make Arvo more ambiguous. Like, I don't think the failure is that they didn't make him seem like a likable guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's they didn't make him ambiguous enough, because he just comes off as too much of a liability or malicious in the things that he does.
Yeah. So before that, you even face that choice, he says that he's come from like a camp or a house basically that has supplies at it.
Yes.
And there's always this, like, the reason why I like the child is that it's like a clock. Like, it's a ticking clock. Like, this kid...
she needs food.
Yeah, exactly.
She needs warmth.
Yeah, the kid is going to need food and warmth in a way that the adults don't, and so you always need to be on the move, and so they decide to trust Arvo and, you know, try to get to this house.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, a pretty long, like, in between the choice branches or whatever, there's, like, the really long scene where you make camp for the night, and you have a long conversation with your other team members.
Yep.
They bust out like a bottle of rum or whatever. You start going around. I like that. I like that sequence a lot. Like, yeah, I thought that was probably really my favorite sequence. Yeah. And the reason why I liked it was that they were finally, they so many of the parts of the conversation were about trying to figure out if Clem is a kid or an adult.
Yep.
It's like, oh, don't talk about sex. And she's like, I know what sex is, she doesn't really know what sex is.
Yeah.
Like, she's like 11 or 12 or whatever. So, like, she knows sex, but she doesn't know the mechanics and the details.
The mechanics of it.
Yeah, and so it's like, but I mean, she's in a world where A, no one's really going to give her the talk, and B, she has to act like an adult all the time, so she's this weird kind of in-between state that I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's been a constant discussion this entire series.
Yeah.
There's a specific scene with Bonnie, later in the episode, that calls back to that same theme. But in the section when it's like nighttime or whatever, did you go and try to give alcohol to Arvo?
No, because I was just kind of wandering around the camp. I talked with Kenny for a while. I did not offer him any alcohol.
Me neither. Yeah.
Me neither. I was like, that's nuts.
No, I don't think so.
But I did offer Jane alcohol, and she took it, and then I was like, I should not have given her alcohol.
It loosens her up.
It's like, yeah, I mean, but then she told me some weird story about her, like, eating glass or whatever was a kid.
That's, yeah.
I had Clementine take a swig, too, because, like, it, you know, Clementine is also trying to push herself into this, like, more adult role. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, that's what kids do. Like, they try to push the boundaries a little bit. So, like, take some rum.
Yeah. I mean, I think the glass story, I think that's a pretty good metaphor for this episode, right? Yeah. Like, I think they do a pretty good job of, like, you know, what this really is about is trying to make a good decision, trying to get the thing that you want, mm-hmm. but just hurting yourself. Yeah. Like, that's not...
Yeah.
And it's a scary story. And it's, like, one of the reasons I like that scene a lot is because... It brings up that issue of, like, she's a kid and she shouldn't be having to make these decisions in the first place.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Did you talk to Arva?
No, so I didn't, but I had planned to. But as soon as I walked past the camp, it triggered the, like, hey, let's hang out. And I was kind of okay with that. I kind of liked that. Yeah. I didn't do it in the order that the game wanted me to, quote-unquote wanted me to. And that's okay, because sometimes it will go on. Yeah, sometimes that happens, right? Sometimes you get distracted and, you know, you... forget, maybe you should have gone talk to him first.
Yeah. I thought the whole, like, around the campfire was good because, and you know, it set me up for what would happen, because it was like the last time in the game where everyone was even remotely happy.
Yeah. Like, for a brief moment. Right. Because they do start fighting again.
Sure, they start bickering, but, like, there's a moment where everyone's a little bit relaxed. There's no zombies around. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's slightly cold, but, you know. Well,
it should be really cold, by the way. It's, like, snowing.
They've tied up Arvo outside, so yeah, it's fine. And you know, I had seen, I think Mike went over to try to comfort him, and they were just kind of, he was just kind of yelling at him to get away.
Yep.
And so, I mean, at this point, Clem was just, like, best not to even interact with Arvo. I mean, it's just kind of a liability. But I enjoyed that scene quite a bit.
Yeah.
Just, you know, hearing from all the characters one last time. So... let's see. So you finally get close to this house that Arvo is trying to get you to. And, like, you just see it. And it's across the river. And the river's frozen over because it's winter. And, of course, there's kind of a herd of zombies that starts coming out. So it's like, well, you know, I guess none of... well, you know, Clem has an excuse. But all these other adults don't have an excuse. Says they lived in a world before the apocalypse where they should have... and most likely did play Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
And they know that.
Do not ford the river.
Never ford. Maybe caulk your wagon and try to float
across. There's no Indian guide to lead them along across the way.
Never ford the river. Like, so they try to gingerly make their way across this ice, and they're not really sure.
Well, fucking Arvo books it, right? That doesn't help.
Right.
There's probably some ice science involved.
Stop pounding on the ice.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that much. I mean, I grew up in California. I've never had to, you know, go across an icy river. But I've gone up to Tahoe enough times to know that, like, you shouldn't all stand on the same part.
Yes.
And so I was at least like, okay, let's spread out. Let's do this thing. But then you're right. Arvo starts to book it. And then what happened for you?
So at that point, we're going along, and we turn around. There's a bunch of zombies coming on the ice.
Yeah.
And Luke... is standing on, like, very, very heavily cracked ice.
He's on thin ice.
He is on thin ice, and everyone's like, oh shit, like, what's gonna happen? We gotta make a call. And at that point, Luke falls into the ice. He falls into the lake.
Yeah.
Shall I continue?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Keep going.
So Luke falls into the lake, and it's Clementine and Bonnie, and Bonnie is like, oh, we have to go help him, like, I'm gonna go over and help him.
Yeah.
And my Clementine is... you know, she's like 11. Mm-hmm. She's lived in, you know, I guess she lived in Atlanta, but I like to think that she knew that fucking science, right? Like, spread your body weight out.
Right.
And I was like, Bonnie, do not go. Luke is saying it. Like, don't come. You're just going to crash down in your ice first, right? Mm-hmm. We all have seen, like, those terrible, like, I barely survived episodes of Discovery Channel or something, right? So I tell Bonnie, like, don't go. And Clementine starts firing on the zombies to protect Luke.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, it's good to note that Luke is yelling at Clementine to don't come close. You know, which I thought was pretty noble. Like, that was good.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Luke doesn't want to get anybody else hurt. That's, you know, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Bonnie's like, no, Clem, you have to go. Like, you're smaller, you're lighter, you could go help him. She starts inching her way over there.
Yeah.
And they both fall into the ice.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So Bonnie ends up falling into the ice.
Yeah.
At that point, Luke and Bonnie are in there, and they're underwater, and they're not coming up. Mm-hmm. And then you hear, like, crashing on the ice, and you run over, and poor Luke is, like, banging on the ice.
Yeah.
And my Clementine, pulls out her gun and starts firing, and then it is, like, heartbreaking. Yeah. She's like, I'm watching Luke die right in front of me. And she just, this goes back, you know, to episode one where, you know, I was just, like, fed up of having people die, and I wanted to save him or right. whatever. So I start shooting. I'm trying to, like, shoot in a ring to, like, make the ice less stable instead of in one part. And I start hammering the gun on the ice, and then Clementine falls in.
And then the Benny Hill music starts firing up.
And then Atlantis is down there, and a merman saves me, and Clementine lives happily ever after.
It's like, oh, actually, no, that was Clementine's last neural synapse firing before she...
That was her fever dream. And she's down there, and she's, like, swimming a little bit, and she sees Luke, and he's clearly taking his last breath. Like, it's like you can almost just see the lifeguard. And then she
goes up. Oh, she can get out.
So she goes up, and then she's pulled out of the ice. Okay. Yeah, and then you see Bonnie climb out of the ice further down the way.
Right.
And then you're basically both freezing to death, and you make it to the hut.
Wow. Well, I didn't help Luke as well, but then...
Did you fire your gun?
So what happened was... So Bonnie went over to help Luke.
Uh-huh.
She fell on the ice.
Okay, so this must be a scenario where you waited too long to kill all the zombies and Bonnie goes over, right?
Or you kill the zombies early enough and Bonnie goes over. I mean, I dealt with the zombies pretty quickly. I don't know what caused Bonnie to do that, or maybe I wasn't firm enough with my answer with her.
Yeah.
But I was just like, no, we're going to take out the zombies because I see Luke kind of getting out. Luke fell in, and so he was halfway in. Bonnie started inching her way over. That cracked the ice more. They both fell in.
Fucking Bonnie.
Then I did see Luke underneath the ice. I fired one shot, and then I realized, if I keep doing this, I'll probably fall on the ice. And, like, there's no guarantee that I'll be able to crack this ice anyway.
Yep.
And so I just saw Luke drown from under the ice.
Ugh, that Bonnie, is fucking heavy.
No, I mean, I didn't even see her corpse. Like,
so Bonnie fell in and never came out.
Bonnie
just straight up died.
Yeah, straight up, like, Luke and Bonnie gone.
Fucking, let me just tell you, good riddance.
Yeah.
No. I mean,
Luke and Bonnie were, like, pretty competent and capable, but, like, they were just gone.
Well, like, my whole thought, too, was, like, look, sorry, Bonnie. Like, I was, at this point, I'm mad. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Bonnie, stay the fuck away from Luke. You're, like, an uneducated southerner. Right. You need to get the hell away from that hole. Like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting. So, jumping very slightly ahead... Mm-hmm. When she's at the hut and you're all getting warmed up, Bonnie is furious at Clem. Like, she blames Luke's death on Clementine. For not trying to help him, yeah.
Man, that's messed up.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, she's really furious. And at one point you talk to her and she's like, you know, like, his death is on you. Like, she straight up, like, calls you out and says, you've got to sort of live with that. Hmm. And then she just straight up leaves. She walks away from you.
Does she leave the party?
I mean, I don't know if I would use those words, like, in D&D. She comes back, but she's, like, a six-level wizard at that point, so... No. Yeah, I mean, she leaves and goes back inside the house. She just doesn't want to talk to you
again, basically. Oh, okay, but she's still with the group.
She's still with the group, but the tone that she treats Clementine is interesting, and it goes back to that conversation about being both a child and an adult, right? Mm-hmm. So when we're on the ice, Bonnie is like... You're a little kid, like, you're a little girl, you can do it, just go over there and save him, you're light, right? And, you know, earlier she talks to you talk to people, talk to Kenny, and, oh, you're a little kid, and all this stuff, and she gave you that rainbow jacket that you're still wearing now.
Oh, yeah.
There's all of these, like, things where Bonnie treats you like a child, until it's not convenient for her to treat you like a child. Mm-hmm. Then she treats you like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, duality, that constant back and forth of treating you like a child and then not treating you like a child is just... outrageous and pissed me off so much, and is exactly why Clementine has such a hard time. Mm. And Bonnie, like, perfectly encapsulates that in everything that she does to Clem.
I mean, at that point, when I got to the house, the dynamic is radically different, right? Because Jane is the only
other... So Luke and Bonnie are both dead.
Yeah, they're both dead.
Wow.
So you have...
So it's Jane, Mike, Kenny,
and
you.
And AJ, and the baby, yeah.
Yeah.
And Arvo. Yeah. So, I mean, like, it just drastically cuts down the group, and it also... Like, it segments out some people. Like, there's no more young people anymore. It's only Jane and Clem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no Luke. There's no Bonnie, who is kind of a motherly figure, especially early in the episode, where she was, like, asking Clem to, like, you have to be the one to talk to Kenny because he trusts you, you know. Like, try to make it so that he's not so macho all the time. Like try to smooth things out.
Yeah.
That dynamic is completely gone. And so,
well, it's gone anyway.
I mean, that's interesting, because in its place, like, in my game, the vacuum is filled by Jane's, like, you know, sense of self-preservation. Like, she immediately starts talking to Clem about, like, Kenny's gonna get us all killed. Like, yep. You have to make a choice now, and you should probably just think about leaving. And so in that vacuum, there's no other kind of less extreme thing to bounce it off of anymore. And so it's like that set up the kind of trajectory of how she deals with Jane.
Yeah, the same thing sort of happens. Kenny loses his shit and almost beats Arvo to death.
Yeah.
I kind of want him to. She does speak up, but you know, one of the reasons she's always speaking up is like Kenny doesn't appreciate that what he's doing to everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, this is bad for him. It's bad for AJ. If he keeps going off the chain, like, yes, Arvo deserves it, right?
Yeah.
But you need to do it wisely, otherwise you're going to clash with the group, and none of this is going to turn out well in the end.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you get to that house, there's this conversation about what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like, I mean, I guess there is food, so they find some stuff.
Yeah,
and so it's like you have this schism in the group of where to go. You can continue trying to go up north to Wellington. Or you could try to like double back and find warmer weather, maybe get back to the to Carverville or whatever and find some supplies that are left over. And you have that long conversation with Kenny outside when he's trying to jumpstart the car. And I mean, at that point, I felt like, and I think this is again one of my criticisms of the episode, like I was never really clear that even the group had a good plan about what to do next.
I don't think the group did have a good plan.
But they set up this dichotomy of like Wellington versus Howes or Lowe's or whatever they were calling it. And like,
which is where they were
with Carver. Yeah, like, Carver, I mean, they were thinking that maybe the swarm would be gone and they could scavenge supplies or something. And it's like, I feel like that choice wasn't set up all that great. Like I had no investment in like the kind of Wellington myth.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had talked about that all that much in the previous episodes. I mean, they've mentioned it here and there.
Well, they showed the smoke in the last episode, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. You're right. I agree with you. I don't think it's super... I think part of it is you're not supposed to feel like you have a goal necessarily in mind. I don't know. Maybe that's incorrect. But, you know, you're talking about how this episode is super bleak. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so bleak.
Yeah.
Is the feeling that there is no good place to go.
Like, yeah.
Either way, right? Even if they talked about Wellington as this mythically cool place, or this place that you, like, bash some dude's head in, and all your friends died there, and there's a huge zombie horde. Like, there is no respite. There's nowhere for you to go.
Yeah.
Where for you to go.
That truck scene, too, was where I finally, like, completely gave up on Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
One, because he was delusional. Like, even though he was talking about Wellington, he was talking about it in a way that a zealot would talk about something. Like, it was complete faith. And the other thing is he said something like he and Clem were just talking and he said, he like flashed on her in anger. He said something about like, I should slap you for saying that or something like that.
That moment.
And I was
right
like,
there.
Oh, at that moment in my head, I was like, I'm going to have to kill Kenny. I tried to get out of the truck so fast after that.
There are two scenes that are really powerful for me.
Yeah.
Well, three, but the two right now.
Yeah.
One was Kenny talking about raising AJ.
Yeah.
I thought that was really powerful. That was really good because you could see that there is a hope for Kenny.
Yeah.
You know, if he were by himself, if it was just Kenny and AJ, I think he could be a good person again.
Yeah.
I think he could learn to be a better person. He could overcome this anger that like drives him now. And then two, that scene where he threatens or says he should slap her is just a reminder, like, he's still a messed up man and you should not be around him. Like, you make him worse in a way.
Yep.
And it's not safe.
Yeah, definitely. And that was the point where I was like, we need to figure something out and I need to just get out of this truck.
Yeah.
Like, it's also like, it was just kind of the final, I flash back to what you had been saying this whole time where it was like, Clem is not good for Kenny anymore. And also the other thing is like, you know, everyone has lost people.
Yep.
Like, why does Kenny get to be the one to take his pain out on other people?
That's a really good point.
When every other person has done this. Yep. And I was just thinking back to what you were saying like three episodes ago where I was like, oh, Kenny's such a sad character. And you were like, everyone's a sad character. Like, everyone has lost their entire family.
Yeah.
Like, why is Kenny different? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's
Did
probably
I say
a good
that?
Point.
That's good.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah.
I'm glad I said that.
Well, and now, like, finally, he still failed to redeem himself time and time again, even though plenty of other people have lost people. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you just, in this new world, you need to be able to not accept that, but at least not inflict it on others.
Yeah.
And, like, Kenny never got to that point.
Yep.
But, okay, so at this point, they just, they decide to sleep on it. Mm-hmm. And then you wake up and you find...
Sons of bitches. Yeah. Those fucking sons of bitches. So excuse my language. And yeah, I was furious.
In your game, it was...
It was...
Arvo?
So, yeah, Arvo's out there. And then Mike and Bonnie show up and they're Bonnie. Carrying all the supplies.
Yeah. In my game...
they're leaving a fucking baby without, like, basic food.
Right. In my game, it was just Mike and Arvo because Bonnie was dead. It was just the two of them. And so, yeah, they were carrying the entire duffel bag.
Clem pulls her gun.
Yeah, they were going to jump in the truck that Kenny had jump started. Yeah. Like, so, yeah, so Clem pulls her gun and then...
You get an opportunity to say, like, oh, I want to go with you.
Right.
This was one of my regrets, and I think this was the closest I've been to being mad at the actual game. And I think I resolved it. I was fine with it. But Mike is slowly inching his way towards you to take the gun. Mm-hmm. And at the last minute, I wanted to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And I pushed the button to pull the trigger, but he'd gotten just close enough that it kicked in the animation to sort of have her drop the gun and mm-hmm. he takes it. Mm. And there's a moment where, like, I was mad at the game and then I became okay with it because I started entertaining the idea that, you know, like, she doesn't want to have to shoot this guy. Mm-hmm. And there is no good answer. Like, she doesn't want to be in this scenario, but she does it anyway because she has to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't any other option. But she waits so long that, like, if you don't make a decision in this world, a decision will be made for you.
Right.
You know? And, like, you might think... Clementine might try to be this adult where she has the ability to take another human's life out of anger.
Yeah.
Right? But despite her desire to want to be that strong, she's not. Because mm-hmm. she's still a little kid.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how I interpret him taking the gun away in that scenario. That felt to me a little bit like the game taking away my opportunity.
Yeah.
Were you able to fire on them? Did you try?
I think it was similar to you. Like, I talked to him for a little bit, but then I tried to shoot. Clem ultimately gave up the gun, but then... Fucking Arvo.
Fucking Arvo.
Shoots Clem.
Dude, at that moment, I was like, I'm going to fucking choke the life out of me. If I don't get the opportunity to kill Arvo in season 3, Telltale, listen in.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And I think, I guess it goes back to, like, maybe your hypothesis of, like, Arvo being the unknown. Like, mm-hmm. you can never really tell what he's going to do, so maybe it's not even worth, like... You can try to be sympathetic towards him, but that doesn't mean he owes you anything.
Right.
And that just shows at the very end, his last action that he has in the game is to shoot Clem.
Yeah, an unarmed unnecessary. Clem. Yeah.
So I mean that was pretty shocking.
Did you call for help? Because you do have an opportunity to ask for Jane and Kenny to wake up and help you.
I don't think I called for help. I don't know what would have happened. I imagine that Arvo would have just shot the minute you started yelling. And then they would have taken off.
That is a really depressing moment. Like, you know, this group that you're trying to keep together. And, you know, again, over and over again, I kept thinking, I don't want to keep them together. I just want to keep them together long enough so that everyone is safe when we part.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in my mind, we get the truck going. We get to Wellington or wherever. Yeah. We all go our separate ways.
Right. Well, and I mean, can you even make any kind of devil's advocate argument for Mike? Because clearly Kenny is going to get you all killed. You know.
Not for not taking AJ.
Right.
Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, okay, fine, you leave. You don't need to take the supplies.
Though. Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Both, all of the supplies? It's three people. They could have one duffel bag. They don't need both.
Right.
You know, if they had even left one duffel bag, maybe I would have interpreted it differently.
Right.
But in my mind, it's like, this. You're just using this as a bullshit excuse. Like, you're scared, you want to be safe, and so you're leaving, and you're a fucking asshole for it. That's what that means. And it's okay, right?
Like, right. Gotta survive.
I understand that in the bitter end, when things are that desperate, you might become an asshole, but you're still an asshole.
You're bitter and desperate, but you're still an asshole.
You're still an asshole.
So Clem gets shot, she blacks out, and you wake up in the RV from season 1.
Oh, God.
Clem looks a lot younger.
Yep.
Lee is alive. He has both arms.
So going back to what I was saying in the beginning, this for me was by far the most emotional scene in this episode. I was getting real teary-eyed. You know, when we think back to our conversations for season 1, one of the things that we were saying at the very last episode was, as Lee, when we knew that Lee was bitten and dying, was like, the only thing that is important is that we get Clementine and we protect Clementine. We have to save Clementine.
Yeah.
It was the driving motivation, right? And you try to train Clementine in the beginning, all of this stuff of like, oh, we can train her to kill zombies and we can train her to be nice to people and train her to be, you know, smart in these scenarios, so that you're raising a kid by the end of the game who can handle this world that sucks and is unfair. And the very last scene of season one is you teaching Clementine how to interact mechanically with this world.
Yeah.
And this episode, I think, is so bleak because it hits home that, I think, ultimate fear of probably any parent. I'm not a parent, but I imagine this is, like, this ultimate fear that no matter how hard you try, it's not enough. Like, it's not going to be enough to prepare someone.
Yeah.
And that episode, I think, was calling back to, like, the darkest moment in season one, right? Duck has been bitten. You know he's going to die. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
Carly just got shot for no reason, right? And again, in episode, if you go back and listen to that episode, we talked about how we enjoyed that scene because it was Telltale taking away your agency and saying, hey, you thought that you could make things the way you wanted to? You can't.
Yeah.
This is 100% was never up to you.
Right.
Sometimes shit just happens.
Right.
And it's this moment where Clementine feels a little bit safe, but you know, like, there's all this weight to everything. Clementine is talking to Lee and she's asking about Duck, and you know that Duck is going to die. And you're just so desperate to be able to have the comfort and safety that, like, Lee is going to protect you, right? And that you can choose what Clementine says in this scene. And I chose to just go full feels and be like, promise me you'll never leave me, which is just like, it's so funny because I was making the decision and I'm like, oh God, this is going to hurt when I say this. I know it is, but it did it anyway. But, you know, like, that feeling of, like, I just want to be able to not have to be in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the moment where, like, it all just sort of flooded up of, like, all of the themes of the season, which is a lot of there aren't any good decisions and how do you make them when they're so hard and you're sort of coming of age in that scenario.
Yeah.
And to be in a place where you can't make any safe decisions, you know it, and your moment, your one moment of respite is a fucking fantasy you have when you're basically dying in the backseat of a fucking car.
Right.
That is super depressing stuff.
Well, and I think it's also, I mean, for me anyway, it was, you know, this, like you were saying, it's the last comfortable moment you'll probably have because it's a fantasy or at least a memory. And it's more of a fantasy because you can actually relive it. Like, I don't know what choices I made in that original sequence in episode one, but I know what ones I would have wanted to make or what ones that would help me take comfort in my current situation. So you kind of have this, like, you know, Ben Kenobi moment where, like, you know, like she's consulting the spirit of someone that she needs strength from. And it's like, I wanted to be able to proactively justify the things that I knew I was going to have to do. And like, ask Lee, like, you know, why do people do things like this? Yeah. And he's like, well, you know, sometimes even good people, you know, you can get so angry that you can do something or you have to do it. And I was like, have you ever done that? And he's like, yes, once or something like that. And I was like,
the feels,
And I was like, okay, well,
because it is, it's, you're right. It's like almost like asking
it's all forgiveness. Permission too. Yeah. It's like, okay, you might have to act like this.
Is it okay that I make terrible, terrible mistakes?
And it's like, I don't remember enough, but I don't think Clem was in that sort of mindset in episode one of season one. And so this is her being able to, you know, retcon.
Yeah.
And this is also this other sad thing about this is that this is her beginning to mythologize Lee rather than see him as a person.
Yeah. Well, what I really liked about that scene too is she asks him, I forget exactly what wording, and it might have been different because I chose a different one.
Yeah.
But I remember asking him, like, you know, why do people do those things? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, you know, he basically says there isn't always a good answer to things.
Yeah.
And at one point earlier, I think it was in the last episode, or maybe it's this episode, Kenny asks Clementine, what would Lee say
if
he were in this? Mm-hmm. And my response was, he would say, there's no easy answers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what the correct answer would be.
Right.
And to hear that from him, so, I mean, at least in my scene, it sounds like you got a little bit of comfort in that scene because it was like he was giving you permission, which I really like that reading of it a lot. In mine, I didn't find much comfort in there at all because his response was the same of like, I can't help you. Like, I can't help you anymore. Like, I'm not around. And even if I was around, I wouldn't know what the correct answer is anyway.
Right.
So all you can do is just enjoy the fantasy for the brief moment.
Yeah. So you wake up. You're in the back of a truck.
Well, one thing real quick about that nightmare scene, though.
Oh, yeah.
That is perfectly timed to when Lee had a nightmare about Clementine being a zombie.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then she wakes up or whatever. Yeah.
Well, my coworker, by the way, he thought it was all a dream and he was pissed. He's like, what? This game is bullshit.
Season 2 was an entire dream.
And the last half of season 1 is just all totally made up. I love the, like,
and then paranoia. We found a cure.
And everyone lived happily ever after.
Then we woke up and it was actually Mario 2. Yeah, I was. That I like that a lot. But you do wake up.
Unfortunately,
you wake up. And at this point, things converge, right? So it's Jane and Kenny, and they're holding AJ, and they're driving.
Yep.
Okay, yeah. And they're just, like, bickering.
Just railing at each other, yeah.
Yeah.
They're both being, and I keep yelling at them both, like, you're both being childish.
Yeah. And because, this always stresses me out, by the way, like, sidebar of, like, just television and movies in general, but, like, when people are talking to each other in cars, and they're, like, looking at each other off to the side. Like,
what are you watching the road?
Yeah, like, stop it. Like, also, you're driving in snow, and if you crash, there's no freaking AAA anymore. Yeah. Like, you know, this is gonna be it. Anyway, so, you know, things get more and more dramatic until you find one of the many traffic jams that that afflicts post-apocalyptic America. Some things never change. And then Kenny goes out to, you know, try to scrounge for supplies or whatever.
And you hear a gunshot.
Yeah, you hear a gunshot.
And Jane's like, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And you even... And I think I... Maybe I agreed, or maybe I was like, well, you shouldn't... We should at least, like, stay in the car or something. You know, Clem is kind of like takes over the wheel, starts driving a little bit, which I thought was really stressful because clearly she had never done that before. Yeah,
exactly.
She can't see over the window. I mean, I don't know. Like, the whole time I was like, why didn't they swap? Like, that was one of the things why I think the episode was a bit weak. There's a lot of logistical things that are weak.
Yeah.
Like, in that instance, why wouldn't they switch seats? And why wouldn't she give Clem the baby and she would take the wheel?
Well, Jane clearly doesn't think ahead.
That's true. I mean, that's very... Well, she does think ahead.
Maybe too far ahead.
In some fucked up ways. Yeah. And, you know, they crash the truck. There's zombies all around. I really like that sequence when everyone gets separated from each other.
Yeah, it's cool. With the snow.
Yeah, it's kind of like the... You know, various games have done this, I guess, but, like, you know, at the end of Journey, when you're, like, just trudging through the snow, like, you're trudging through the snow and there's walkers, but they're so cold that no one really cares about each other anymore. You're just kind of going past each other.
For a while, I thought that she would just, like, that would be the game. Like, it would just be, like, a whiteout and then her walking into snow.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good scene and a tense scene, but not... But because the walkers were a backdrop, you know, again, it was the humans that were being the problem in this one. But we both made it back to, like, the rest stop, basically.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you got there, was it you and Jane?
Yeah, me and Jane.
Okay. Yeah. No baby. No AJ.
No baby. Nope, no baby.
Gone.
And Jane's like, oh my God, like, you're going to see some shit or something like that. Like, and you're like, watch him what he is.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, dear God.
Yeah. So, you know, Kenny comes back, sees the baby is gone. Loses it completely.
Yeah, absolutely apeshit loses it. Well, and Jane is antagonistic too a little bit.
Yeah.
She's not just like, oh, I'm so sorry. She's like, you know.
Yeah, and she doesn't.
Especially when they start fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just kind of goading him on, which, you know, that's the thing where it's like, she's already decided. Like, she's decided that there's no redemption for Kenny, so she's just going to continue to push him over the edge. And she views it as accelerating the process. The inevitable process rather than it being even a choice.
Yeah.
And so there's a pretty nasty fight where they're, like, stabbing and punching each other and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. It gets ugly.
Yeah. So that's where one of the decision junctures is.
Yeah. You mean the decision juncture?
Well, there's another one.
Was there two? Okay. Well, what was the first one?
Well, I mean, the one where... Well, I and about 69% of other people shot Kenny.
Oh, right. So Kenny is on top of Jane.
Right.
Like, this doing is like a private Ryan. Private Ryan.
Yeah, exactly.
Slowly stabbing her to death.
Yeah.
So you and 67%, 68%.
Yeah.
I also shot Kenny.
Yeah.
That was not an easy shot to make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't feel good about it, but what choice do you have? I mean, he's literally killing Jane right in front of you.
Well, and also, I had made that decision back when we were in the car.
Right.
Where it's like, Kenny's not going to make it out of this, and that's why I was, like, looking to Lee for some sort of permission, you know.
Yeah, that's so, like, interesting. Yeah, because your interpretation of that scene colors your interpretation of this scene.
But you shot too, right?
I did, and but my interpretation was like, there's no good answer, right? Like, yeah, I shot him.
Did you feel anything for Kenny as he was dying?
I did. I mean, Kenny says something like, oh, it's not your fault. Like, I sort of
he said you made the right choice.
Yeah, like, I was like, I brought this on myself or something like that. Yeah, I mean, I fell for him, right? Like, I don't want Kennedy to die. Like, that sucks. Yeah. And Clementine gets an opportunity to say something like, oh, you're going to be fine. And he's like, don't lie to me.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Like, I think I said something like, well, maybe you'll get to see your family again or something like that. There's this weird, like... Throughout the episode, there was this weird sense of, like, maybe there's an afterlife going through. Yeah. Like, they had said that multiple times.
My Clementine just kept rejecting that.
Just no. Yeah. Just there's no afterlife. I was thinking about that because, do they finish the job with Kenny?
Oh, you mean, like, does he come back as a zombie?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't remember putting another bullet in him.
I don't think they do.
Ugh, God. I mean, because he was, like, it was a shot to, like, the chest or something. Like, yeah, it was not,
Well, so maybe Jane did afterwards.
Yeah, there's zombie Kenny. Well, she very well could have. I wouldn't know. Because at the end, you realize that Jane has just stashed the baby in a car.
Yep, it's all a fucking setup so that you could see how crazy Kenny is.
At that point, Clem, for me, just snapped. It was like, what are you doing?
Yes, me and you both. I was like, are you fucking serious, Jane? Like, you did that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Just to prove a point.
So like, then I presume our ending was the same. I was like... fuck you. And this is great, too, by the way, because this was following the flashback to where Lee made the decision to leave what's-her-face behind.
Yeah, yeah. Lily.
Yeah, Lily, because she did the unspeakable and killed one of her own.
Yeah.
And it was the same. I was like, no. And I really, what I actually really enjoyed about the scene is, as Clementine is leaving, Jane is asking to go along with her.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane says something like, okay, do you want me to say it? I can't do this alone.
Right.
That moment of vulnerability made it sweeter leaving her behind. Because it's like, if it takes you this long to realize that we cannot be at each other's throats and survive this shit, it's too late.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I walked away.
Yep.
And Clem just walks into the wilderness, like, with a baby, and... and for me, that's basically where the game ends, right? Like, it says, like, 9 days later, she's, again, in a field, the same type of field-looking thing that she was in at the end of the first Walking Dead.
Which I really like. I like the coupling of those two scenes.
I didn't like that.
You didn't like it?
No, because, like, it's, again, it's a logistical problem. Like, how did she get there? How
is that's true. 9 days, and it's already, the snow has melted.
And how is this baby still alive? Like, she didn't leave with provisions. Like, I mean, like, I just, there was a lot of...
She's smart, man. Give her some credit.
I guess, but there's just a lot of things that, and it's, I thought in that scene...
Yeah, it logistically, you're right, for sure.
It was powerful that, like, this has just become her life, and she found a zombie. She knew that there was a horde in front of her, so she started harvesting the organs, spreading them on herself, spreading it on the baby, like...
That, but that was like a baptism. Like, I liked that a lot,
I like that idea. I mean, I think, you know, this is the first generation of people who grow up in this world.
Oh, God, that's fucking depressing when you put it like that.
I mean, you know, Clem is the last generation of people that remember the pre-world.
Yeah.
Now it's just the world. So, I mean, this is how this person is going to live.
This is how we live now.
Yeah, exactly. Spread these entrails on your face. Yeah.
Like, oh, and across that rainbow jacket again. And that same, like...
That jacket must smell so bad.
I mean... I agree. Like, there is that logistical problem. I thought the same thing. Like, 9 days? Like, did she go back to the car? Did she go back to the car and, like, figure out how to reverse? I don't know. I mean, one of the reasons I liked it was, like, you know, she puts on the organs and she walks through the zombies, right? Like, so you get a sense that, you know, there's something right. Mm-hmm. It's just that she's completely spoiled now. Like, there is no kid anymore in her.
Right.
Not in the sort of classical sense.
Mm. We're scanning through the, you know, and I should say that when I was playing it, only 22% of the people were alone with AJ.
Yeah. So me and you were alone with AJ.
It's weird. I just want to know how other people arrived at the decision.
Yeah.
Like, who felt safe with either of those characters.
Wow.
Or why they forgave.
So I watched one video that was, like, retweeted by Telltale today. Mm-hmm. And it was this guy who plays... He's been playing The Walking Dead with his 8-year-old son, which is kind of weird, by the way.
Yeah, like,
that's a mature game.
Yeah.
But he is seeing himself as Kenny because he's playing with his son, who he sees sort of as Clem. And so he feels for Kenny and didn't end up firing on Kenny.
Right.
And then they go off and they find Wellington. And they have, like, a parting goodbye, potentially, I guess, and Clem and AJ go inside.
Mm-hmm. That's, which is where, like,
ending. That's crazy.
Like, I mean, and also, like, the idea that Wellington is a place, but they reject Kenny from, like, you know, coming in, basically. Yeah. Or, you know, you can continue on, I guess, without...
Like... I have a really hard time imagining the chain of events that would create you and Kenny and AJ staying together like some fucking, like, buddy cops.
Yeah.
Like, that's just... The world that you, sir, who made those decisions, are living in a vastly different world than mine.
Right.
Where, like, she somehow maintains some semblance of innocence. She has a father figure in her life. She's not a fucking, like, single mom or something, right? Like, that's an insane... Or even, like, Jane. Who's picking Jane? Who's like, me and you, Jane, let's go.
Right. And, I mean, the other thing, same deal goes with Jane. Like, they're going to turn into, like, I don't know, like, that dynamic duo of Tank Girls or something. Like, I mean, like, it doesn't make any sense that they would, like, be together. And also, like, you know, finding Wellington and then leaving with Kenny anyway is equally wild to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't...
God, we're reading some of these endings, and it's blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Like, Jane and AJ go back to house and then meet more people and then get another decision?
Yeah.
What's so interesting is a lot of these decisions result in them having a family in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, AJ and Jane are a family. AJ and Clem and Kenny are a family. And in our versions, like, there is none of that.
Right. Yeah, because we're just...
Sad, lonely. Well,
I mean, it's also like that was influenced by how Lee dealt with this type of situation in the first season, for me anyway. Like, once Lee was bit, he went off alone. Uh-huh. Like, he just, you know, he went out with nobody. And it's like, you know, again, she's using that as her guide for doing things. So it's like she understands that sometimes you just strike out and you're on your own.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was like... The idea behind it was powerful. I just felt the execution was kind of rushed out. And, like, the ultimate end of, like, well, how did they actually survive? And, like, where are they? Was some of the details didn't fit as nicely as how they fit at the end.
Yeah.
Like, did she go north or south? When is this? Where is this? Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing.
So, overall, we've been going on a super long time.
Yeah.
But it's the last episode.
Right.
So,
yeah.
How did you feel about season 2 overall? Like, were you pretty happy with it?
I mean, I think that it was in some ways like more thematically interesting because it's about a kid who's straddling in between what her role should be in the group.
Yep.
Whereas Lee felt like much more of a traditional video game type protagonist. Like Lee felt more like a more relatable, like more of a cipher, like you can put your ideas into there. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, I anyway was more influenced by what had happened in season 1, and it felt like Clem was a bit more of a, you know, independent character and also just a non-traditional character.
Yeah.
So I like that, but I mean, I just think thematically, like, season 2 is just way... Who is redeemable in this entire story?
Yeah.
Like, nobody. Like,
Clementine,
AJ? I guess. Yeah, I mean, like, AJ hasn't been, like... AJ hasn't had to kill first Walker or whatever.
That we know,
like,
of.
Yeah. Be gumming it to death overall. I mean, like, I just felt like there was so few people... who had anything but like a self-centered interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just
Luke, I guess.
I guess Luke. I mean, you know, he's still kind of, I guess Luke is okay. I mean,
he's a little cold-hearted now, am I right?
Geez. Oh, jeez. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, Luke must be it, but it's just, this is, and I think part of it is a function of time. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it was the outbreak for season 1, but this is like years into it, or at least months into it, you know? And I just, it's just an exhausting game at this point, you know?
Yeah, it is exhausting. Yeah. I mean, in some of the same ways that the comic or the TV show becomes exhausting, mm-hmm. right? Like, there are certain just down and down and down feelings. But I think, you know, as a season 2 that feels like a sequel to season 1,
mm-hmm.
I think it picks up on a lot of those same ideas and then just addresses them in this new light, right? Like, if season 1 is about trying to make this person capable of handling herself in mm-hmm. the coming apocalypse,
right,
then this is what that person looks like in the full of it, right?
Right.
Like, and those themes, I think, don't go away. Episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in this season are all in some ways about growing up, they're about gender, about like what it means to be a good person or a bad person when like you have to make so many hard decisions. And yeah, like, no one is super likable or forgivable at the end of the day, but I don't, you know, maybe that's just the sort of way things are now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, and I think that adds to just how depressing season 2 is. Yeah. Like, you're not like, at least season one, it was really sad when Lee was gone, but you could take some solace in the fact that he had probably improved Clem's life in some way, shape, mm-hmm. or form, where at the end, especially for our, both of our endings, you know, Clem, I don't think Clem's life wasn't improved by this whole odyssey.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, you can see, like, I have a hard time imagining my Clem falling into a group and being totally trustworthy again. Yeah. Like, she's kind of messed up now, in my mind, right? So it'll be interesting to see where they want to go with season three. I'm presuming they're doing a season three.
I imagine they will, wouldn't. Yeah.
You know, maybe it's more about Clementine finding something to be hopeful about again. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's freaking exhausting. And, God, the five different endings are nuts. And the idea that we both got the minority one was also interesting, because I didn't know how that would go.
It just shows how we're soulless individuals.
Well, I mean, like, gosh, who would leave with either of those? I really do want to know. Like,
yeah,
I'm
like, if you left with Jane, what's wrong with you? I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, what is that? So in one world, Clementine and AJ are just in Wellington kicking it. They're hanging out.
Right.
So in season three, are they going to be in Wellington? They're going to be with, like, just, I don't know. Maybe it'll jump forward another, like, you know, 2 years or something crazy.
Yeah. Just to wrap things up, would you be interested in the continuing odyssey of Clem, or is it time to switch tracks?
No, I think I would be interested in the continuing odyssey of Clem. Yeah, for sure. You know, there's the first episode begins with, like, Clementine looking at a picture of Lee and thinking about, like, you know, what he is. And we talked about how he has so much meaning because he's sort of defined who she is in this post-apocalyptic world. Mm-hmm. And at this point, she's done enough things. She's said goodbye, I think, to Lee in that final scene season five, season two, episode five, that I think at this point, she's her own person now, and what that person will look like when tested, we haven't seen yet. We've just seen her sort of become who she is now.
Well, and also, depending on how far they jump ahead, they could then have kind of the full cycle of Clem is old enough to be raising AJ now in the same way that Lee was old enough to be raising Clem.
God, that would be
and
weird.
So it's
maybe
like
we'll play as AJ.
That.
Maybe we'll play as like a baby.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, maybe they'll jump forward
to milk?
6 years.
To milk.
Like, I mean, I would like to see that, because that would fully complete the cycle and bring Clem up to where Lee was when he died. And then there's nothing for her to lean on Lee for anymore.
Yeah.
Like, she's gotten further than he has ever got, so, like, where does she draw her strength from?
I don't think they'll jump ahead anymore, I think. I think that there's been a lot of demand to, like, tie them together more to the show stuff. Like, 6 years into the apocalypse is quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
Like, who knows what would happen at that point? I feel like if you really want to keep it fresh in the zombie world, you sort of have to pick up right where it left off. Mm. But, I mean, at the same time, I think I might be okay with, you know, picking up somebody else's story. Like, maybe it's not about, maybe we'll play Jane in the next season.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it might be interesting to play someone who has sort of committed that sin and the way that they work themselves back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we've never really played somebody who's immediately distrusted or immediately has a history with people. That might be an interesting take.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess we'll leave it there. We'll open it up to other folks. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our website if you want to go back and listen to our old Walking Dead conversations. They're all over there. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave us a review. It helps us find our survivors in the dark abyss.
And then we'll just leave you all alone. Strike out on our own.
Were you ever like, let's just leave the baby, man? Like, baby's a huge drain on resource.
You mean, was I ever Arvo? No, because I'm not a monster.
All right, all right.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao.